Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. Today I'm joined in the studio by writer Mark Mason for this week's literary discussion. For this week's show, we'll leaf through three new non-fiction releases, starting with a collection of comedian Stuart Lee's newspaper columns. We'll then move on to a book about trailblazing, literally, by Robert Moore, before finally concluding with a compendium of insights about wit and humour by Marcus Berkman. All that coming up right here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. As promised, we start today's show with an anthology of prose musings written by British comedian Stuart Lee. Content Provider, Selected Short Prose Pieces, is a collection of newspaper columns by Lee which looks at modern Britain and the author's place in the country, covering topics as varied as Life Without Crisps and Jeremy Corbyn. Mark, what did you make of this?
To start laughing. It's the crisps piece, which is brilliant. Like a lot of Stuart Lee's pieces that are in the book, his newspaper pieces, it works on sort of twisting around an idea. It's an old comedic device of twisting two things that shouldn't, you know, the wrong way round. So the crisp piece is a piece satirising people's approaches to alcohol by replacing alcohol with crisps. And so one of the sentences, as a child, every school holiday, I would be left in the hot car outside a succession of Devon pubs with only a pint of Courage Best for company while my father went inside to eat crisps. And, you know, like I say, old comedic device, but he does it very well. And to answer the actual question, Mr. Paxman, that you started with, I would say that the book is brilliant. And I love Stuart Lee despite myself. He's one of those comedians, and very often they're left-wing comedians, although you get it on the right as well. And you just know that they were the sixth former, and even younger than that at school, who was just sitting at the back of the class sneering at everybody, either people mentioned in the lessons or their own classmates, just going, you're crap, that's crap. So anything a politician does, by definition, in the modern world, it's a political problem in the first place. It's difficult to deal with. So there are going to be people, you know, the arguments for and pro, sorry, pro and con, any position. And as a so-called satirist, it's very easy just to sit there and go, you're crap, because, and list the cons. You can always do that.
And Stuart Lee is very sneering, as you say, as a comedian.
He is, and I've always been, you know, very suspicious of comedians like that. But Stuart Lee, when you realise, when you listen to his stand-up, when you read his pieces, in the end, that's not what he's doing. He is that sort of person himself, I think, by demeanour and by instinct. And he admits that himself. And, you know, there's an introduction to the book where he talks about his past and how he was unhappy for a lot of his 20s. You know, a lot of comedians are having a go at other people, doing hate comedy because they hate themselves. But he's not like that. That's his strain of comedy, but he does it better than that. You know, he's always aware of his own limitations. And he's one of those writers who, when he writes a newspaper piece, goes inside it and he never oversimplifies and talks about his own pieces, several of which were written on tour. And he does a little introduction to several of the pieces, explaining, you know, he was sitting in a Travelodge hotel room in a gig in, you know, before a gig in Dundee or wherever it is. But then, like I say, he picks up on the weaknesses of his own position. He says, my audiences are comprised exclusively. He realises this on a tour. My audiences are comprised exclusively of left-leaning, middle-class Guardian readers. And I quickly became aware that I've learnt little I wouldn't already have known from merely talking to myself, which is a nice little funny line in itself. But also, you know, we're all like that. We all talk to ourselves or to people like ourselves the whole time. And he's good enough to admit it. But it doesn't stop a lot of the writing being absolutely fantastic. One of his bête noirs, or bêtes noires, whatever. The sort of person who always insists on sergeant's major. It's French, so you don't know where the... Anyway,
might be bêtes noires.
Yeah, let's not get dragged into that. Is Louise Mensch, the absolutely appalling ex-Tory MP novelist, just a ridiculous woman. And she's had a go at me online as well, so I can side with Lee on this one. He said, Louise Mensch's subversive idea... I forget what she was writing about and I don't care. Louise Mensch's subversive idea spurted through the Twitterverse like a frozen spear of urine falling from an aircraft toilet. He's very good.
I mean, I've always personally... I think he's incredibly funny on stage, but I've always somehow find him not quite as clever on the page because his delivery is so important. The way he says his line, he's a brilliant deliverer of jokes. Well, there aren't many actual jokes. I mean, putting them together like this, do the columns kind of... Do they make sense, I guess? I mean, do you think that they... he has a style in writing that does actually work on page in a collection like this.
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting you make the point about the difference between his stand-up and his writing. He himself makes the point in one of the introductions to the pieces. He realised his prose for the newspaper pieces, I think these are the exact words here, looking at my note, almost never worked when he tried it as a stand-up routine. He would sort of try and conversationalise it. You wouldn't just stand there and read an Observer piece out. But it didn't work as a stand-up routine. So it's interesting that he himself has picked up on that. But for my money, the ones in this book, almost all of them work brilliantly. And to the extent, you know, a lot of his thing is based on fantasy and about this fantasy world, like this the Crisps thing. You know, you're just satirising the world by coming up with a bizarre version of it. To the extent that you can't tell sometimes whether... because he will mix things that have really happened with his fantasy. You can't tell which is which. There's a piece in the run-up to the Olympics, the Olympic enforcement idea. This is the 2012 London Olympics. The Olympic marketing authorities were clamping down on anyone using anything Olympic-based in their marketing. And he says, an independent butcher, Dennis Spurr, S-P-U-R-R, which just sounds like a comedy name, just so you're not sure from the start whether it's real. An independent butcher, Dennis Spurr of Weymouth, has already been told to remove a sign showing his bespoke sausages in the shape of the Olympic rings. Now, I've deliberately haven't looked that up because I don't want to know whether that's true or not. I think the beauty of his comedy is that could be true, that could not be true, and it works either way.
Content Provider by Stuart Lee is out now, published by Faber and Faber. We move on now to a subject that's a lot more wholesome, apologies to Stuart Lee. On Trails and Exploration is the first book by journalist Robert Moore, and as its title suggests, it looks at paths of all descriptions, from winding trails in the Appalachian Mountains to the origins of our road network. Mark, I think it's fair to say that many people would see this and think it's not the kind of topic they'd want to read an entire book about. But did it surprise you in that sense? I mean, is it engaging right to the last minute?
It did. I mean, I'm sort of inclined to like it in the first place because I like walking. Well, I did a book myself about walking around London. And so the notion of... and all the metaphors about journeys and life and all that sort of stuff. So I'm interested in that area. And I think Robert Moore does it really well. His interest in the subject started from himself walking the Appalachian Trail in the States, which is 2,200 miles. And he keeps coming back to that in the book and his own experiences. And so a lot of the stuff about that itself was interesting. He talks about many people, as they do that walk, they adopt different names, what they call their trail names. And often, this is what he talks about, often in an attempt to shape new aspirational identities. A tense silver-haired woman renamed herself Serenity, while a timid young man called himself Joe Kickass. Sure enough, over time, she seemed to grow incrementally calmer and he more audacious. So that thing about you go and do something as mad as that, as walking 2,200 miles, because you're sort of, there's something not right in your everyday life that you, or, you know, you're just bored with it and you want to go and do something else. But then what I loved about the book was that he talks very specifically about trails, not just going out for a walk and what you see, and very rarely just going out even for a predetermined route that you yourself have planned. He's talking about pre-laid down trails. At the Appalachian Trail, there is just one trail, and you start at the beginning, whichever way round you do it, start at the beginning, walk that route, and end up at the end, and you have to walk exactly the same route. And so he limits himself to that. That's his, you know, what he's concentrating on. But the way the book works is by going off at tangents at times. And so you can be, which is sort of an irony itself. It's not a contradiction that matters because he goes off on some very interesting tangents. He goes to see the oldest trails ever discovered, which are 565 million years old, left by some tiny creatures on what was then the seabed. Don't know why they left it, but there are definite marks that they've left. And so that then leads to a chapter where he discusses what it means to be human and the nature of how those creatures evolved into us. And there are, as one scientist explains to him, there are more cells in you that aren't you because there are just as many, in fact, even more bacterial cells inside your body as human cells. Wow. So that's a sort of an example of the sort of tangent that you can lead off on. And so
it becomes quite philosophical then, I guess. I mean, he starts with this idea that seems very rooted in the physical world, and then it kind of goes off into more philosophical ideas.
Absolutely, yeah. Sometimes about himself, sometimes more generally. And then also there's enough substance in there to stop it being just about that. Some great facts in there about zebras and giraffes often herd together. He does a lot about animal trails. And zebras and giraffes often herd together, possibly, we're not sure about this, but possibly because zebras have got fantastic hearing And giraffes have got fantastic long-range vision, obviously, which makes them, if you put them together, they're brilliant at spotting lions.
Wow.
Because the zebras can hear them, giraffes can see them. And there's a brilliant bit in that chapter about an elephant that walked over two rangers in Zimbabwe who'd fallen asleep, and an elephant who was following an elephant trail stepped over them so as not to kill them. And when they woke up, they could see their footprints, the elephant's footprints, stamped into the ground sheet between where they were lying. So it's full of fantastic little details like
Absolutely.
That.
And he also talks about the internet. So he kind of brings the internet and internet pathways into it as well. I mean, what did you think? Do you think that's a bit kind of tacked on as he feels he needs to have a sort of 21st century topical angle on this? Or does it warrant that as well?
I think it did. That bit in particular didn't work for me as much. I mean, I'm fascinated by how the internet works and how quickly it happens and all that sort of stuff. He didn't... As it happened, that bit didn't tell me anything I didn't know or that was particularly interesting. But, yeah, I mean, he keeps it modern and talks about, you know, lots of things that are going on at the moment. A lot of the stuff, having said that, a lot of the best stuff was the historical stuff. Hmm. There was Charles Darwin's account of a colleague of his, of Darwin's, who'd placed two snails in a garden where there wasn't very much to eat. The stronger one climbed the wall to reach the garden next door where there was a lot more to eat. And Darwin's colleague concluded that it had deserted its sickly mate, but after an absence of 24 hours it returned and apparently communicated the result of its successful exploration, for both then started along the same track and disappeared over the wall. So lovely little stories like that.
Fantastic. On Trails by Robert Moore is out now, published by Simon & Schuster. Our final book today is The Spectator Book of Wit, Humour and Mischief by Marcus Berkman, who wrote a monthly column for the magazine for a full 28 years. As The Spectator approaches its 200th birthday, it's a good time to look back at what has made the publication so enduringly popular. In short, it's clever, funny and often highly provocative prose. Mark, first of all, what are some of the highlights in this?
Pretty much the whole book. I should say, declaration of interest before we start, one of my pieces for The Spectator is in the book.
Very decent of you to say.
Despite that, it's still a good book. I was very nervous, actually, as I was going through it, because I turned to see which my piece was. And it was a book review I did for the magazine. And so I could have ended up doing a book review about one of my own book reviews. But in fairness to myself, I think my piece sort of just about holds up. You know, I was pretty nervous that you're in the company of people like... Well, I mean, where do you start? Just about anyone who's in the book is fantastic. There are some brilliant, brilliant Geoffrey Bernard pieces. You know, I was reading The Spectator long before I wrote for it. And throughout my 20s, Geoffrey Bernard died in 1997. In fact, 19 years ago this week, because he died in the same week as Princess Diana. And he died on the Friday, the day before the funeral. And as Dominic Lawson, then the editor of The Spectator, put it, he said Geoffrey Bernard would no doubt have blamed the press, like Diana's supporters were blaming the press. He would have said that the press didn't give him enough attention. That was famously called a suicide note in installments, his low life column. Geoffrey Bernard, complete alcoholic, who just, you know, drank himself to death, basically, and ended up losing a leg to his alcoholism and all that sort of stuff. But the black humour was absolutely fantastic. Famously used to drink in the Coach and Horses in Soho in London. And Geoffrey Bernard, in the book, one of his pieces says, "It's the only pub I know of in which prudent customers carry a hip flask." Because the service in there could be so bad. There's a fantastic story about Dennis Thatcher, who... This was written by John Wells, who famously did the one-man show of the Anyone for Dennis, called Anyone for Dennis, which was about the Dear Bill letters in Private Eye, which satirised Dennis Thatcher's attitude to his wife being Prime Minister. And there's a story of him getting a train from Paddington. One of the carriages was reserved for the inmates of a psychiatric institution who were going to join the train. But for the first bit of the journey, Thatcher has the carriage to himself. Then the inmates from the psychiatric institution get on, and the person who's looking after them starts counting to see that they're all there and goes, 1, 2, 3, 4, gets to Thatcher, says, "Who are you?" And he goes, "I'm the husband of the Prime Minister." And the guy goes, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's brilliant stories like that. There's the stuff that it sort of talks about everyday. I mean, that's just an anecdote. That anyone can tell that. But some of the best humour is that sort of everyday stuff that Geoffrey Bernard did. One of the best at the moment is Deborah Ross, who... It's just fantastic. She does film reviews for the magazine, but like a lot of the best reviewers, there's a lot of her own life in there as well. She says she's planning to write a book called How to Be a Domestic Slobess. She's obsessed with Nigella Lawson and is going to do her version of a Lawson book. How to be a domestic slobess will come with its own questionnaire to check whether you are a slobess. Have yesterday's knickers ever fallen out of your trouser leg while you were walking down the street? Have you ever made Nescafe by running the mug under the hot tap? And her dream is to marry Alan Bennett. And she says, I know he bats for the other side, but I wouldn't be overly demanding. Perhaps on my birthday as a treat. So the really best writers can make something out of nothing.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Clarke is another guy who does that. He's inherited Jeffrey Bernard's Low Life column. And he's with a mate of his in a pub, Jeremy Clarke, and they see a very, very drunk guy trying to leave the pub. And Clarke's mate turns to him and he says, the last time I saw something walking like that, the whole herd had to be destroyed. It's just a fantastic book.
Fantastic. I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. The Spectator Book of Wit, Humour and Mischief by Marcus Berkman is out now, published by Little Brown. That brings us to the end of today's show, I'm afraid. Thanks very much to my guest, Mark Mason. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. This show was produced by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time on Monday when we'll be looking at art with Ossian Ward. But for now, goodbye from me and thanks very much for listening.